Hello, this is Raisa McLeod with Portia Larley from Blueprint Radio Project. We are talking to Gladys Radek, who is the co-founder of Walk for Justice. Hello, Gladys.
Good afternoon.
Could you please tell us why you co-founded Walk for Justice?
In 2005, I had a 22-year-old niece, Marilyn Chipman, who disappeared off of the world-renowned Highway of Tears, it's called, which is Highway 16, Yellowhead Highway, that stretches from Prince Rupert to Prince George to Winnipeg. And when she disappeared, I was looking for her, started researching and realizing that there was a lot more to it than just Tamara that had gone missing. There was several of my relatives that had gone missing on that highway. It also tied into the place that I live, which is in Vancouver, BC. And of course, everybody knows about the Robert Picton era. And through losing Tamara, we started doing more research and collecting data and realizing that there's a real serious social problem here in Canada that is targeting basically First Nations women and all women. Walk for Justice represents all women. That's why we have the number 4 in our logo. So basically what it's led me to believe that there's a serious problem against all women in Canada. I feel that there's a lot of things that Walk for Justice has moved forward on, and number one was in 2008 when we walked across Canada. We demanded a public inquiry into the deaths of so many women, and as a result of that, the pressure was put on to have the public inquiry here in Vancouver for Robert Picton. That was a start. Things aren't going so well with the public inquiry because we already knew that the police had messed things up, and all we're doing right now is sitting back and watching everybody get paid. And, you know, they're not correcting any of the problems. There's no actions to improve the system.
So what do you mean when you say the police had messed things up?
The police, in essence, were responsible for not investigating so many of the women from the downtown east side. And when Robert Picton was doing his nasty work, the police had an opportunity at one time to arrest him for attempted murder and could have saved at least a couple of dozen women's lives had they arrested him when they had the chance. As a result of them not wanting to investigate, for lack of a better word, they treated all of these women like they were all prostitutes and drug addicts and that nobody cared. That is totally wrong decision, because every woman is valuable. Every woman should be respected and valued as a life giver of society. None of them should have been treated like society's throwaways. Whether they were prostituting or not, there was a reason that they were in that position. And that's going to be leading us to many other social issues, such as homelessness, such as poverty, such as lack of education, such as domestic violence. You know, our women are all really vulnerable anywhere in this country.
Right. And so why is this Highway of Tears a target for missing women?
I would say that, first of all, the location, it's very vast up there. It's beautiful up there. There's a lot of logging roads. There's a lot of highways. There's a lot of desolate areas. There's a lot of opportune moments for men to pick up our women and kill them and throw them away.
How many women have gone missing since in the past decade, for example?
According to the RCMP on the Highway of Tears, between 2005 and 2008, they were saying that there was 18. They started out with 9. And they had a symposium in Prince George in 2006, and they were at 9. The following year, they took one name off and put 10 more names on, and that number went up to 18. But not only that, what they did was they expanded the geographical area, trying to take the story away from the truth. And so this area between Prince Rupert and Prince George is the notorious for the Highway of Tears, and it covers about a 784-kilometer stretch of highway between Prince Rupert and Prince George.
So how can you tell that, in fact, we're dealing with missing women and possibly murdered women rather than women running away from their hometown?
Well, first of all, our women are too poor. Second of all, of the 18 that they do have on that list, 13 are unsolved murders. So their bodies have been found, but their murders remain unsolved. That's how we know there's a killer up there, or two, or three. And as far as I'm concerned, if they've got 13 unsolved murders, there's 13 perpetrators running around up there.
It also means that there's also lots of other bodies that probably haven't been found yet.
That's right, and these are just the ones that we've heard about. We were actually discussing databases a couple of days ago, and there is no true database per se from grassroots organizations. There's several people working on databases. There's a lot of cross-referencing that is going on. But when you add them all together, right now we're at a point where we have over 4,200 women and children missing and murdered across Canada.
4,200?
Yes.
What's the government number?
The government number, if I remember correctly, a couple of years ago, the RCMP put out a statement and they accounted for 1,589.
Okay. That's a small town.
Yes, it is. And ironically, when we were up on the Highway of Tears doing a presentation, we had a member of a community that came up and told us about the research that she had been doing. And she said, I come from a village of 500 people. And she said, I have as many people on this list of missing and murdered women that we have in our community. So she had over 500 missing and murdered women on her list.
What perpetuates this systemic issue?
The justice system. Seriously flawed justice system that does not want to put these perpetrators in jail for any length of time. There's a revolving door when it comes to criminals in this country. Unless you're a high-profile case like Robert Picton, where he has finally been charged, there's a lot of people that are getting away with murder. There's a lot of unsolved murders. There's a lot of people that are still killing women, not in just one area, but all across Canada. There's perpetrators everywhere.
When you mention unsolved murders, do they have a suspect? Is it an issue of evidence? Is it an issue of will? Unsolved, it might mean they just don't have the evidence to even point at somebody.
In my view, that would be a play on words for them, because what I'm seeing happening is the lack of doing anything, the lack of political will, the lack of investigation on behalf of the wonderful RCMP. And if it's a First Nations woman, well, they're not as likely to go look for her and find out what happened to her as they are for any other ethnic race in this country. Racism plays a big part, discrimination, sexism, and right now I'm finding that all these unsolved murders should be giving the public a message that there's a lot of perpetrators running out there. What are you going to do about it?
Does Bill C-10 address any of these issues? Because it's a very controversial bill at this moment. But do you think it will address any of these issues?
I think that it will help a little bit. But the thing is, right now, the way it is with women, women are really vulnerable in this country, because right now we're being run by the old boys' school. And I mean with the government. I mean also with the RCMP and the policing departments. And right now, women are pretty vulnerable under any circumstances. I don't think that Bill C-31 is going to help. It'll help us by name, but you got to realize that women don't have ownership of the land. Back in our day, like way back when with our ancestors and everything, women had a lot to do with the decision making in our reserves, and the last person that even the chiefs would talk to before making any decisions for the communities would be their wives. So, you know, our roles are reversed now, and right now our women are being treated like we're disposable because we have no ownership of the land.
So how does the ownership of the land work on a reserve?
Usually when a woman is in a domestically violent situation, she'll usually leave the men and the children in the house and she'll go out and look for shelter. Same with when a woman is in a domestically violent situation, she's the one that has to leave the home or the community. And that's what we're finding here, is that I know from personal experience, having lived up north and being abused up north, I got no desire whatsoever to move back over to my community because of the levels of abuse that have gone on up there. So a lot of women are migrating to the urban cities and towns thinking that they're going to be bettering their life. Meanwhile, they end up falling into the cracks of the system, because not only are they in a domestic violence situation at home, they go out into the communities and then there's racism.
I've heard of peace circles being successful in some of these communities where there's been endemic violence. Have they been successful?
I haven't heard of any out here, so I don't think I can give an opinion on that. It would be nice. Peace circles and healing centers throughout all of our communities would be beneficial for everybody, because, you know, like you've got a domestic violence situation, people don't seem to remember that when children are there, they're going to be witness to everything that's happening too, and they're going to grow up with that. One example I'll give you is the fact that there was a young girl that was killed in Victoria, Kimberly Proctor, who was burned. One of the perpetrators was the son of a murderer. You know, this is a learned behavior, so we're talking at least the last four generations of the database that we have. So what's happening is a lot of these young men that have witnessed their fathers being murderers are turning into perpetrators themselves.
I wanted to know if your organization has been reaching out to the Muslim community, because we have been hearing stories of honor killings starting to become more problematic in Canada.
Walk for Justice, as I say, it has number four in there, represents the four directions, also the four colors. And the Muslim community, yes, our hearts and our prayers really go out to them. I know we had quite a few deaths about 4 or 5 years ago down here in the Lower Mainland, and it was really, really heart-wrenching. But we also have to remember that a lot of the Muslim communities, the women, are taught not to reach out for help. So it's really difficult to break through their culture.
So, on a different topic, can you tell us a bit about the Walk for Justice visit to the Picton Farm?
We usually do, when we're leaving from Vancouver, we usually like to stop. That's usually our first stop over at the Picton Farm to honor those women that suffered tragic deaths over there. And what we do is we just offer them prayers, and we let them know that we're fighting for justice for them. And that's all we can do for them right now. It means a lot to the families that we're doing that as well.